dark side's calling out of the misery. She'll never know just how I feel. From out of the shadows she walks like a dream. Make me feel crazy, make me feel so mean. Nothing gonna save me from the love that's blind. Slipping to the dark side across our line.
And now it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, Kanan, Ezra, and Ahsoka return to the Jedi Temple on Lothal, seeking to learn how the Inquisitors continually track them. Each has a different experience, and nothing will ever be the same. There will be Sky Guy, Grande, Yoda, my feelings, oh my! We're talking about Shroud of Darkness this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good.
I had half a moment where I was like, we haven't recorded in 2 weeks, and I was like, what do I say in the beginning of all this? I don't remember. It's been 2 weeks.
It's all in there. It's like riding a bike.
I know. How was the barbecue? The Two True Freaks barbecue.
It was great. There's a podcast up on it in the Eat It and Beat It already. With a short, you can tell it was a good barbecue by how little recording I do, because I'm having so much fun that I'm like, I don't want to like work and do a podcast. So I condensed, you know, the 3 days down into, you know, like a good 40 minutes to an hour's worth of talking. But yeah, we had a riot.
I will go one day.
I ate a lot. The hard thing about coming back from the barbecue is I get used, you know, I wake up at Dario's and like the first morning his wife has made me a real smoothie. The smoothies like I like them, which is basically just fruit and ice, you know, no fancy stuff, no milk or yogurt or anything like that. Just fruit and ice and a big old smoothie. And, you know, then we just start snacking around and cooking. And by the end of the 3 days, I've been eating like, I guess you could say it's three times a day, but it just basically is constantly all day. And we had a meat salad. There's a picture of the meat salad on the, you know, the page for the podcast. And we had fried chicken. The third day we had fried chicken, but it was this like garlic fried chicken recipe that Dario saw on a YouTube show where basically it was soaked the night before in salt and garlic. And then you like scrape the garlic off, batter it, fry it. And then it had a basic, this butter, and olive oil and just chopped up garlic sauce that you had to melt the butter and soften the butter a certain way. So it just came out almost like this light mayonnaise of butter and garlic that you would put over the fried chicken as soon as it came out of the fryer.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
It was amazing just smelling it when they would put the garlic sauce on top of the fried chicken. The smell of it would just go everywhere. It was delicious.
I need to come to this one day.
Yes, you do. Oh my god, Dario would be so excited.
Dario, I'd be excited too. I want to see you, and I want to meet you in like real person time.
You get to meet their guinea pigs too.
Aww. Are they like sweet and you can like pet them and hold them and love on them?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. If you make a certain noise, if you say piggies in a certain way, it means food, and they will like start hopping around and getting excited and climbing up on their cage. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. I had a good time in Raleigh. Got to see the Game Grumps live. Got to high five Vernon Shaw, who is the creator of Dream Daddies, as he was dying. Because the show is interactive and stuff, and they do questions at the end. And if you don't know what Game Grumps is, it's a Let's Play on YouTube, and they're like my favorite Let's Players. And I saw the show up in North Carolina, and Vernon, we had the very last seats all the way to the left and the very last row in the fourth row. And so when they said cheapest StubHub tickets, they were the cheapest StubHub tickets. In the future, I will vouch for much closer seats. But Vernon ran all the way up to the very last row so somebody could ask a question. And it was the guy like two seats down from us. And because he ran up like four stories like worth of stairs, he was so out of breath. So me and Billy were like, oh my God, Vernon, are you okay? Are you dying? Do you need our water? And he's like, no, I'm good. So I was like, okay, cool. And I high-fived him. And then Billy very quietly just went, I really loved your game Dream Daddies. Thank you for making Dream Daddies. And Brandon's like, oh, you're welcome. Oh, he was just dying because he just ran up four stories. So it was a lot of fun. Got to see Megan. I picked you a couple things up from a little store in Raleigh. So they're being shipped to you with your buttons. They should be on
Tuesday.
I can't
tell you how excited I am about those buttons, though. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, I made this episode's coming out after DragonCon, so fuck it. If you were at DragonCon, I have Jay Guys and Jedi buttons, but it doesn't matter now.
Too late.
But, yeah, I'm going to be giving out Jay Guys and Jedi buttons, but I found a couple little cool things in a little store for you, Chris, so I mailed those to you, too.
Excellent. I can't wait.
I saw them, and I was like, these look like Chris. So.
Oh, wow.
This looks like a thing that Chris would like. So it should be there on Tuesday for you. So I actually had surprisingly more notes for this episode than I thought I would. So I would like to go ahead and get started on it.
All right. Well, don't let me hold you up.
That and I still have to write another outline after this. So all right. You ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go.
You didn't ask me if I liked this episode.
Oh, did you like the episode?
I liked this episode.
I liked this episode, too. There was a lot of, like, old feelings. Very nostalgic and painful to watch at the same time. And then you get to the horror show that is Yoda. Yoda, I love you. I love you, honey. But you are not rendered nicely in Rebels. You look like a tiny little monster.
Yaddle did Yoda's makeup that day.
Did Yaddle... Okay, can I read... I'm going to go ahead and read you, like, one of my lines. One of my notes. Yoda is missing, like, half of his teeth. Has he always been missing teeth? How am I just noticing this now? Can you really see what's... You can really see what's missing in his teeth in this format. Where are Yoda's teeth?
It's like they caught him when he was sleeping and his dentures were still in his little glass of Alka-Seltzer by the side of the bed.
He Has looked Yoda like, always he, been missing that many teeth? It's horrifying.
I know, and I'm gonna throw away one of my notes too. My note was Yoda looks like he's somebody's accountant, or you know, like their financial advisor or something. You know, he just looks like somebody, or he looks like a mid-level manager at a grocery store or something.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's just, like, I don't like how he's rendered in Rebels. It just, he looks like he's not fully, like, he looks like he's missing textures. Like, he's just, like, two or three textures off from everybody else. Like, he doesn't look like he's finished. I'm just, I love the Rebel style, like, 99% of the time, but, like, when it comes to Yoda and the Wookiees, oh my god, they look like little monsters. They look terrible. Has Yoda always been missing teeth? Has he always
or
not
is
had
just
teeth?
That how, is just that how the way his teeth are, you know, maybe they just only get, like, they get those little, like, every other tooth grows in or something. I don't know, but it was not appealing. It was not a good look for Yoda.
No! So, sorry, yeah, Yoda, I love you.
I imagine we're going to get a grumpy Yoda this episode. I'm guessing he's not a big fan of this one.
That's cool. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Shroud of Darkness is the 33rd episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on March 2nd, 2016. It was written by Henry Gilroy and directed by Saul Ruiz. Some extra information for you. Matt Lantern returns to reprise his role as Anakin Skywalker from The Clone Wars. His other works include Timeless, which you should all watch because it's an amazing TV show, and even though it's done, you should still watch it. And he's done other shows, but you should watch Timeless because Timeless is amazing. In the Lothal Temple, ancient artwork seen in the Jedi Temple includes humanoid beings riding on what appears to be giant wolves. Hints for events later in the series. For Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber-training hologram, the Rebels team reviewed Episode 3 era reference footage of stunt coordinator and swordmaster Nick Gillard giving a lightsaber lesson to a video games team. In the Rebels recon for this episode, they talked about where the Inquisitors came from and how this episode confirmed that they all had Jedi roots. They also discussed how the vision of the Grand Inquisitor to Kanan was entirely motivated by Yoda to let Kanan know that he is a Jedi Knight. I'm going to say that one again because I'm going to come back to this in my notes. All the visions they see are motivated by Yoda. That's an Act 3 note of mine. Dave called working with Ashley Eckstein and Matt Lantern as Lanter. I always call him Matt Lantern, but it's Lanter. As Ahsoka and Anakin was a weird throwback day. Dave had been looking for a way to get Matt back into the show, and Matt could do many different voices, but he always wanted to have Anakin in Rebels. StarWars.com had interviewed Dave Filoni about this episode, and the question was, when Ahsoka is running out of the temple and she sees Yoda, that's from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, right? And Dave Filoni answered, absolutely. I couldn't help myself. It's just the right thing. Yoda and Ahsoka kind of had a bad moment when she was expelled from the temple, and I just couldn't have them get so close to meeting without seeing each other and without kids knowing that there's no hard feelings there, that there's some sort of forgiveness there. I just thought it was important to show, and it was a fun little moment, and it was absolutely Last Crusade, the Templar Knight saying goodbye. Did I steal one of your notes?
No.
Okay. I was wondering, did you catch that?
I did not. I caught it. I didn't associate it with The Last Crusade, which is one of the Indiana Jones movies. I've only probably watched that one like 4 or 5 times instead of 20 times. Mm. So it's not as burned in. And I didn't even picture it as Yoda waving goodbye as much as just saying, hi, it's me.
Hi. I'm so proud of you, tiny Padawan that I threw out of the temple because we were a bunch of douchebags there in the Clone Wars. Sorry. And Ahsoka's like, ha, I'm better for it now. Bye. So, I'm going to try a new thing, Yoda. When I was on my road trip with Billy to Raleigh and back, she introduced me to a podcast called My Brother and Me. Which is by, like, the McElroy family. And they take random Yahoo questions. And so I just wrote in random Yahoo questions. And this was the first thing that came up to me. So until we get more listener questions, I might just pull random shit off of Yahoo. Is that cool?
Yoda knows not what a Yahoo is. So Yoda goes with the flow.
Yahoo is what you say to ladies. You go Yahoo.
Learned yippee from young Anakin.
Yippee! This is real pod racing! Alright, you ready for your question, Yoda?
Question for Yoda.
By the way, Yoda, you're not ugly. I love you very much. Rebels does not put you in your best light.
Yoda was not ready for his close-up that day.
I know.
Yoda was having a bad teeth day that day.
And Yaddle did your makeup. I'm sorry, because they do love you very much. I just
fired she was. Fired.
Well, your question for today is, Yoda, what's the worst injury you've ever had?
Many injuries Yoda has had. Want to see Yoda's scars?
Depends. Where are the scars?
Oh, many scars has Yoda. Many scars.
But where are the scars?
Look at this.
How'd you get that?
Never mind.
Why is it shaped like that?
Never mind. Yoda's worst injuries. Worst injury. Many horrible injuries has... trivia fact. You know that Yoda's species looks like a caterpillar? Yoda used to have 14 segments.
Really?
See from neck down? That was segment. Crawled around like caterpillar Yoda did. Every year, though, somebody would step on one of Yoda's segments or get in fight. Slowly, all the segments gone.
What?
never knew that about Yoda, did you?
No, I didn't.
So Yaddle, too. Yaddle had 14, 15 segments.
So what if you lost the segment? So did each segment have legs? And that's why you have legs?
Two legs, yes, two legs.
Okay. That was just like, but what if you lose a middle part and then you don't have legs?
Much like movie Human Centipede.
Okay, Yoda, thanks for this week.
Yoda will be here all week.
Go relax in your swamp and like curl up in like your banana leaves or whatever and like take a nap.
I don't know if this asking questions thing is such a good idea. I have a feeling there's people who are fast-forwarding. At first, they were like, oh, yeah. And now they're like, I don't want to know that about Star Wars.
I don't want to know that Yoda used to be a centipede.
A segmented centipede, yeah.
All right, so. Act one?
I'm ready.
Act one. We open with Kanan and Ezra looking for a new base. But the Inquisitors are there! Hi! Hey, guys! Hey, Inquisitors! I missed you guys! You've only been gone half the season! Hi! And they try to call Chopper, who is probably ignoring them at the moment because that's what Chopper does. Which leaves time for the Seventh Sister to flirt with Kanan. And Kanan is like, whoa there, lady! I get all the crazy I need for my space wife. But don't tell her I said that, because she'd be crazy. And suddenly, the fifth brother force throws Ezra over a cliff. Kanan snags him, but they're both stuck, leaving them as sitting ducks for the Inquisitors. Ezra taps into his animal whispering powers and calls some nearby bat bird thingies to come help them out. Kanan and Ezra leap off the cliff and land on the bat birds, and they fly off, leaving the Inquisitors behind. Excuse me. Then Chopper zooms up in the Phantom minivan and they hop on board and jump to hyperspace. Kanan is rightfully unnerved, like a sane person, that the Inquisitors keep finding them and just keep trying to kill them, while Ezra looks like he's quite smug with himself. Oh my god, ugh, teenagers. As long as them, the Jedi, are with the Rebels, the Inquisitors will keep them from finding a permanent base. They're going to need some advice on this, so we must cue up the Ahsoka Fog Machine laser light show and power ballad music. They meet back with the ghost, and Hera lets them know that she is waiting for them. Ezra goes into the back, and a power ballad starts, and a fog machine sets off, and laser light shows go on, because Ahsoka Quintano is in the house, and she's watching a holocron, And guys, the holocron is Anakin, and I'm crying really hard because it's Anakin, and he's like talking, and he's doing a lightsaber demonstration, and like Ahsoka's watching it, and I just have all the feelings. Oh my god, it's Anakin. And it's actually from Kanan's holocron, which he's been using to teach Ezra. We also find out that Kanan is an Anakin Skywalker fanboy because Kanan thinks he's just the GOAT. Do you know what the GOAT means?
I have no idea what the GOAT is.
The GOAT is a sports term, and it's short for greatest of all time.
Ah.
Greatest of all time. So, the GOAT. And Ahsoka says that Anakin was her master, and I'm still trying not to cry, you guys. And Ahsoka talks about how great and how kind Anakin was, and that the last time she saw him was what will be covered in Clone Wars Season 7 when Anakin ran off into the Episode 3 timeline. So go get that Disney Plus subscription now, you guys. And Kanan comes in and says he has a crazy plan. He wants to hunt the Inquisitors and take the fight to them. But Kanan is fearful because he can barely protect Ezra from the Inquisitors, let alone the rest of the fleet. And Ahsoka says that they used to turn to Obi-Wan or Master Yoda for answers, but they can't do that anymore. But Kanan is like, wait, we have a way to talk to Yoda. To the Lothal Temple! Road trip! And Ahsoka's like, what the fuck now? What did you think of Act 1?
I liked it.
I like it too.
It backs up my theory of these two Inquisitors being basically stooges. Because basically Ezra and Kanan are fighting them and basically like making their grocery list while they do it. You know, they're like, oh, so blah, blah, blah. You know, they're having sort of a they're fighting. But they're just sort of like, dum-de-dum, oh, it's the Inquisitors again, you know, what are we going to do, where's the ship, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they don't seem worried at all. A little bit worried, but then these guys are stooges. Like, when Ezra's hanging off the edge of the cliff, they just stroll over there, giving them plenty of time to hatch a plan and you know... I call them headlight mantas instead of space bats, but
I think, oh yeah, yeah. I think their actual names are like Tabitis. Like we've seen them before. We saw them in the episode where the Luminara episode, they try to like hump Hera's ship.
Yes. Yes. And their eyes look like just like a set of headlights on an old car, you know?
Yeah, like their actual names are like Tabitis or something. I looked it up and I was like, I don't care enough. They're bat bird things.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, so like if I were the Inquisitors and I really was trying to get these guys, as soon as they were like fiddling around on the cliff, I'd be doing a little parkour jump over there, you know, wasting no time. But they just like are like, shall we go? Dum dum dum. We got them on the cliff. And you know, so I think that sort of just highlights their downfall is they're not the most talented students we've ever seen. You know,
right.
they're better than the average, you know, space citizen because they've got their force powers, but they're not the shining stars of the dark side.
I think they really like showboating. And because like Grande was a bit of a showboat too, but Grande also could like catch on and like attack when he needed to.
You got
to
back up that showboating though, you know.
Yeah,
that's the thing is they could showboat, but
the showboating, like Grande was very good. Like he'd be like, "Here's a little bit of flair. Now I'm gonna fucking kill you," and like he was good at it. And that's why he was so scary and a threat. Like these guys are like, and this is kind of like a bit of a bummer for me because I loved the Inquisitor the first time through. I watched it, but now that I'm like really revisiting and analyzing them, like I'm just like, they're not as cool as I want them to be. They're kind of lame.
Well, you know, that's the thing with the dark side is the dark side, you don't often get your best going to the dark side. You know, by definition, you get the people who are, you know, so these guys are more of like in like the what was the other guy's name? There was of Malfoy's buddies, there was Goyle and
Crabbe and Goyle.
Yeah, these guys are basically the Crabbe and Goyle, you know, of the dark side.
Is it Crabbe and Goyle? Crabbe and Goyle? Crabbe and Goyle?
That sounds right to me.
Crabbe and Goyle sound.
But they're fun. They'd be fun at a party. Well, maybe she would be fun at a party. He's kind of a schlub. But you know, they are not that, you know, Kanan and Ezra are like, Kanan and Ezra seem like they're almost like, this is really good training, you know, to spar around with these guys. And they don't even seem to be like, you know, too worried about even like the Inquisitors getting lucky and being dangerous. So what are my other notes? More Ezra being the, you know, Dr. Doolittle, Dr. Bridger Little or whatever. Couldn't think of a good combination of the two. And my only other note is my first thought was when I saw when they walked in on Ahsoka watching Anakin, I was like, why is she watching like Anakin's YouTube tutorial video? And I'm like, is she just like, and I'm like, she's definitely not taking lessons, or is she just like reminiscing about her old master? But I like the idea that Ezra's been watching Anakin's training videos. And especially as this is the episode where they start on the whole little tangent of like, this Ezra, he may be a bad guy, you know, he may end up falling to the dark side, you know.
Yeah, and watch out for him. I like that too, because like that, we also know that that's Kanan's holocron, so like you have to know that like Kanan probably watched that when he was on the run, just to help keep his skills like up to date and stuff like that, even though he was hiding. Mm-hmm. So I liked that scene, that it wasn't, that it was Kanan's holocron the entire time that Ahsoka found, was just laying in the ring.
But that's all I got for part one.
For me, I like the opening of this episode though, because it's been a while since we've had like a lifesaver fight.
No, they've been opening up with space battles lately.
Yeah, and I think it was, we haven't had a lightsaber fight since the last time Ahsoka was here with the kids episode. So it was just nice to have like another lightsaber fight, because it's been a while. And as much as they're stooges, I do love the Inquisitors. Lord, I love them. And it's also nice seeing how much Ezra has been growing in his abilities as well. Like just when, and what I mean is like with a lightsaber, because we've seen him all season growing with his animal abilities. But the last time he faced the Inquisitors, he wasn't faring as well, and now he's actually holding his own a little bit more. So, I mean, he still got, like, thrown over a cliff, but it's nice to see, like, Ezra's growing in his abilities, too, from where he was at the beginning of the season.
But he basically pulled victory out of being thrown over the cliff, too, so that's very Jedi right there.
Yeah. I love when Kanan says to the Seventh Sister that he doesn't go for crazy anymore, but when he says that, he pauses. He goes, well, I don't go for crazy pause anymore. And I love that moment, because it's like, do I include Hera on this list? Nah, she's not that crazy.
No, Hera's definitely not crazy. Hera's the one who has her shit together the most of all of them, I would say.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a funny like nod back, if you've ever read A New Dawn. Because in A New Dawn, like, Kanan's a drunkard, and it's talked about multiple times how he used to just sleep around. And there's an infamous one that kind of, like, pops up now again in the fandom of the barmaid. Like, there was this, like, barmaid or a bar owner's daughter or a tavern daughter that, like, he got really close to, and then something happened, and he bailed. So a lot of people was wondering, like, did he knock her up? Or did she get crazy on him or something? And so, like, I like that line, too, because it's, like, a little bit nod to, like, Kanan's old days of, like, yeah, I'm free, I'm drinking, I'm sowing all my oats. Because there's a running joke in the fandom that Kanan has a ton of illegitimate children running around the galaxy.
Yeah, that's all them at the end of The Last Jedi.
Yeah. There's been jokes about that too, like Jason Syndulla showing up at Luke's school, and he's like, here's all my half-brothers and sisters who are all also Jedi. We're starting our own school, Luke. That's been a joke too. I love just seeing like little moments of downtime in the Ghost, because we don't get them very often. Like, there was a part last season where like Hera was reading, but like when the guys get back to the Ghost and Hera comes into the room, Zeb is just working on his bow rifle. He has this, like, little tool, and he's, like, working on his bow rifle. And, like, those kind of little details of showing them having downtime just shows, like, the ghost is their home, this is their space. And so it's just like a nice little like world building detail, because like Zeb didn't even have to be in the shot at all, but like they had him there working on his bow rifle, just doing what he does like normally in the day. And I like shots like that because it helps
build with, the world. With a 22 minute show, you really can't, you know, you really don't get too much of that stuff. So it's nice when they throw it in, even if it's only like literally like 30 or 40 seconds or a minute before, you know, story starts happening. But it's always nice to see. I kind of noticed that too.
Yeah,
it was like it almost felt like we're far enough into this series and we've got all these characters developed enough to where we can have a scene every once in a while where everybody just relaxes and is themselves, because everybody's familiar with these characters. And it feels more they had a couple of them at the beginning of the show when they were still feeling out, you know, and people weren't familiar with the characters. And it was kind of, it wasn't really awkward, but it was kind of awkward. It was not working as well as here. And I was like, I thought to myself, this would work. This works a lot better with somebody who's been watching, you know, if this was like the first show you were watching, you'd be like, I don't know about this scene, but like, once you're two seasons in and you're familiar with the character, the scene really works.
Yeah, and it's so little. Like, I can't even remember if Zeb says anything. No. Oh, no, he does. Because Ezra's like, we ran into Inquisitors. And Zeb's like, well, that's nothing new.
Yeah.
And, like, that's all he says in the scene. Like, that's
oh, did you have fun? There. Yeah.
So, I remember the first time I watched this episode and I saw the hologram of Anakin, I just started crying.
It's funny because it took me like 2 or 3 seconds to realize, and then it was just like, oh, I'll get more into it as we're in the scoring up part. But I wasn't a fan of this episode the first time I saw it. And I think I wasn't paying as close attention to the stories as I am now.
Yeah. And
it just seemed... I'll get into it more later on as the story develops, but like it might have been like I watched like there was a gap between episodes because I was just watching these like on by download, and so this time have you know watching it every week and being right along with it, it's so much better, you know, that, that now that I'm paying more attention, deeper attention to it. It works a hell of a lot more than it did for me the first time.
And like, that's just a nice little, like, the whole little hologram moment is nice, too, because on one hand, if somebody has never watched Clone Wars and they're watching Rebels, then it gives, like, those people a little background, like Ahsoka going, like, yeah, this is my master, like, he was kind and stuff like that. So it's new information for somebody who's never seen Clone Wars. But if you have seen Clone Wars, hearing Matt Lanter's voice.
Yeah.
And hearing that voice again and seeing Anakin again, like that.
And seeing Anakin at his most Boy Scout, you know, doing a tutorial, you know, being his most like upright Jedi. Yeah.
Yeah, compared to like later in the episode when it's like, do you know what I've become? And I'm like, so it's just really nice. Like I don't realize how much I miss hearing Matt Lanter voice Anakin until like I hear him voice Anakin in like these like little moments like this, and then so we're gonna get it again in Twilight of the Apprentice, and it's chilling. It's so chilling. Mm-hmm. So it's so good. I kind of get the impression that this is a very, very, very tiny mini Kanan transition episode. We've been talking about these transitional episodes all season. And
it's the bridge to the transition.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this is, it's not really that Kanan is needing to change too much. It's the assumption that Ezra is changing. And I'll come back to that. I just wanted to note it, though, because, like, it's not really that, well, Kanan, I guess, is changing a little bit, but I think he's starting to realize how much he has to start kind of letting Ezra go. So I'll come back to that. And I didn't realize that Ahsoka didn't know that Yoda was alive, because this entire episode, this entire opening act, she was like, yeah, I wish we could talk to Yoda, but he's not around anymore. And the guys were like, oh no, we know where Yoda is. And she's like, what? He's dead. Yoda's gone.
Oh, Yoda? You know Yoda? Yeah, we know where Yoda is.
And she's like, really?
Yeah, we're just playing video games with him online.
Yeah, and so I thought that was interesting because Bail Organa knows that Yoda's alive. And Ahsoka worked with Bail through the Fulcrum thing. And I realized that then Bail never told Ahsoka that Yoda was alive. And I was like...
He probably wasn't supposed to tell. I'm sure Yoda told him not to tell anybody. And Bail Organa probably took anybody as anybody. I totally... Like, even letting another Jedi know where Yoda was could compromise Yoda, you know? Just from the Jedi knowing where they are and having it in their brain, they could get caught by an Inquisitor, or they could go there and draw somebody in, to Dagobah. So,
yeah, and that's what I was about to say, because that was actually probably the safest for Ahsoka, because she would probably start like obsessively looking, like when she was younger, like right after Order 66, and like Ahsoka novel, Yoda, Ahsoka, like when she's younger, like in the novel. And she first becomes a Fulcrum agent. Like, that's when she probably would have obsessively like searched for him. But this Ahsoka is much more grounded. She has much more experience. She's kind of accepted this lot in life. So I think like this Ahsoka takes it much better than she would have when she was younger. But it was just one of those moments I was like, oh, Ahsoka doesn't know that Yoda's alive. Whoa. Bail Organa never told her.
And yeah, and Kaden and Ezra probably didn't even know that they were supposed to not tell anybody or something. It's weird that they didn't immediately tell her, but they might have assumed that she knew that Yoda was alive too. And at the same time, you would also be like, yeah, I don't know if Kaden certainly knows the importance of keeping the whatever Jedi are out there hidden and out of. This whole episode is about, you know, them compromising the whole rebellion just by being Force-sensitive Jedi.
Yeah. I mean...
Well, that's not what the whole episode's about, but it's a part of it, what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Though I do like Kanan's, like, little line. And I understand it's, like, a serious line, but it sounds kind of emo when Hera's like, why don't we come all the way out there? And he's just like, it's just safer this way. I was like, that's a little dramatic, but I understand where you're coming from. It was just how it was delivered of, he throws his head to the side and he goes, it's just safer this way.
Well, he's probably thinking that one of the considerations of what's the implications of what's going on is he may have to not be around Hera, you know?
Yeah. So anyway, that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No. I'm ready for the crazy shit to start happening.
I wasn't sure when exactly to split this one, so let's just play along. Because by the time I split it, I was like, there's 7 minutes left.
It sounds like you got them, because it was a pretty clear, like, it wasn't a wipe, but it went black and then back to the story. And I was like, okay, that's sort of in the right place. The end of 2 and 3, a little fuzzier.
Yeah, so...
All right.
Anyway.
Act 2.
Ezra, Ahsoka, and Kanan arrive at the Lothal Temple. Ezra says that Ahsoka and Kanan could open the temple, but Ahsoka says that she's not a Jedi. They should probably open the temple for her. So Kanan and Ezra use the Force to open the temple, and Ahsoka looks on in wonder. But the door they went through last time passes by as the temple keeps rotating. It reveals a new door for them to go into. They leave Chopper with the Phantom and head inside. They find a spot in the middle of the room, and they all start to meditate to try and contact Master Yoda on his meditation hotline. And suddenly, a door opens, but only Kanan can see it. He realizes that this is the path just for him, and he goes through the door. And to Ahsoka and Ezra, he vanishes through the wall. Kanan emerges in an old Jedi training dojo, where a sexy, tall-shaped, mysterious man who looks an awful lot like my Rebel Season 1 boyfriend is waiting for him. And it's a Temple Guard Sentinel. We will call him Sexy Sentinel.
Sextinel.
The Sextinel! Oh, the Sextinel!
That's a porno novel right there.
I'm so happy. This is why we're friends, Chris. This is why we're friends. This right here. Kanan wants to know how to defeat Vader and his Inquisitors. I'm going to try and remember to say sextanol. But the sextanol, I can't do it because I'm going to laugh every time, says that if they fight, Kanan would fail. But when the sextanol says that, I can't, But when the sexy sentinel says that Ezra will fall to the dark side, dad mode Kanan activates. And Kanan is like, the hell you say about my son? My good boy? I will fight you, bro. Don't you say shit about my son. And the sexy sentinel is like, ugh, you're just as annoying as you were in season one. Get out of my way so I can go kill your kid. And Kanan's like, this is weirdly familiar, but whatever. I'm going to fight you. And then they fight. Meanwhile, outside, Chopper is hanging out, and he's reading magazines like Bolt's Gone Wild, and he's letting his little satellite dish do all the work. And suddenly, he picks up on something, and he hops into the Phantom minivan and moves the ship to safety. And shortly after, two TIE advances land outside the temple. The seventh sister and the fifth brother have arrived. The sister sends out her droid to scope out the area, and it shows them that there's a Jedi temple underneath the stone pillar. And they start to scheme evilly. Back inside, Ezra and Ahsoka small talk. And Ezra says that Kanan described Yoda to him, but Kanan didn't know what Yoda was really like. And Ahsoka says that she doesn't think that anyone really knew what Yoda was like. And her eyes are closed when she is describing Yoda. But when Ahsoka opens her eyes again, Ezra is gone. And she's like, what the fuck? And the temple is a horror movie waiting to happen because this temple just keeps fucking eating people. Anyway, Ezra opens his eyes and he's back in the world between worlds. He hears a voice behind him and he turns. And there is a monstrosity that is Rebels Yoda.
Hello.
Oh my god. I'm going to split the act here.
He's Frank Oz Yoda, which is... Like, I listen keenly to Yoda voices, and I notice how, like, Frank Oz does the old,
Yoda has a little bit of phlegm in the back of his throat, Yoda.
And then he's like, and then he looks like Yoda the accountant.
I think you were much closer when you were like, he looks like they just woke him up, because he does look like he's wearing a bathrobe.
Yeah.
Yoda was just having his afternoon nap.
Yoda had a couple drinky poos too before he took his nap or something.
Yeah. But, so what'd you think of Act 2?
I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot. Act 2 was the part I really didn't like the first time around. For one, I wasn't paying attention enough to the Inquisitor thing, so I was like, why is this guy still alive? Blah, blah. I totally over my head, you know, the whole reveal that it's the Inquisitor, but it's basically a representation of the Inquisitor when he was still a regular, when he was still a Jedi. You know, this is a glimpse of him before he turned to the dark side.
Yeah.
So I didn't get what I'm like, why is the Inquisitor's, you know, force spirit hanging out? I totally didn't get it. And this whole episode felt to me like they were just sort of, you know, here's an excuse to patch in a bunch of stuff from, you know, Clone Wars and stuff. And it felt poorly written to me. And now I've gone a complete 180 degrees on the writing of this. I think it was very, very, very well written. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm following it closer and paying attention, this part was just fantastic. And it got the feels and the visual part of me. I mean, the shot of Chopper when he detects the two Inquisitors coming, and he's sitting there with his little radar extended, and you've got that beautiful blue sky that you only get that color with like sunset.
Yeah.
And it's literally as the scenes progress in this part, it's getting darker and darker. So it's at, you know, you're watching the story unfold and the sunset at the same time, and the colors are changing and the lighting's changing. It's just very beautiful. It's like this whole episode is kind of like an animated Ralph McQuarrie painting in a lot of places, in whether it's outside or in the Jedi temple. The night in imagery in it is just beautiful.
Because when I was in Raleigh, we went to a little bookstore and I found the Rebels visual guide for like $2 and I picked it up. And so when I was looking at the Lothal section, something that they wrote into the visual guide is whenever they're in the cities or in the plains and stuff like that, there's always like, it's always going to be slightly cloudy and smoggy from pollution, from the Imperial pollution. But when they go to some place like here, the Jedi Temple, it's at the top of the planet and it's away from the pollution, so the skies are clearer. And I thought that was a nice kind of cool detail, because like now that I think about it, I was like, yeah, we don't usually get blue skies anywhere else on Lothal,
right.
But we get blue skies here at the ice caps.
You're out in the country.
Yeah, so I thought that was sticks. A cool like little detail that I never noticed it, but when I read that, I started thinking about that, and I was like, yeah, that is true.
You don't have regular pollution, and you don't have light pollution from cities and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I was like, that's a cool little detail. So I've been really enjoying going through the Rebels guide, because it has like age, like everyone's ages and stuff like that, and it has like little breakdowns of their weapons. So it's a really cool little guide. So it's a coffee table book that I'm enjoying.
So I'll do my visual stuff first, and then into the, because then I can segue into you with the emotional stuff. The scene in the dojo didn't remind me of like a kung fu movie as much as it reminded me of Keanu Reeves getting trained in The Matrix visually.
Oh, okay.
What else? The scene of Kanan with a red and blue lightsaber.
I have that in Act 3.
And okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna come back to that. One of my questions for you and actually we'll just talk about it now and come back. Fine. Because my question for you is, what do you think the significance of Kanan's second blade that he grabs being red? Like, what do you think that's?
He's literally in between. Like, Kanan isn't having a dilemma between the light and the dark side of the Force, but it's being hinted that he is there in the middle of. He's in many ways with what they were saying about Ezra being potentially going bad, and just his position in fighting the Empire. Kanan is set between the dark side and the light side. And so symbolically there it is, one in each hand. And when I started thinking that, I started noticing which sword is being dominant, and they kept switching. Like when he first got it, boom, he switched it out. Like they switched the angle and stuff, so the red sword was dominant and he was fighting with it, but they kept switching, you know, which sword was his leading sword. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I'm gonna come back to this probably in Act 3, because I touched back on a lot of my season one notes in Act 3, but for this act, I haven't revealed in my review that it's the Grand Inquisitor, but we know it's Grande. And right. I saw that moment as a point of, I've always thought Grande and Kanan were both mirrors and foils to each other. They were both following very similar paths, but they just went on two separate paths, but they came from the same place.
This pretty much confirms that.
Yeah. And so to me, like back in season one, Grande wanted to destroy the Jedi for the dark side. But we see him here in Act Two. He's telling Kanan, step aside. I need to destroy Ezra to protect the light side. And so this is showing like the two sides of like who he used to be and who he was. And then we went to the other extreme in season one when he was in the dark side. And I liked this because if you took this Grande as a Sentinel, and if you took the Grand Inquisitor Grande and you put them together, they would actually be probably very balanced. And I think to me, it shows the importance of balance in the Force, which is something I feel like they're working towards with Rise of Skywalker, is the importance of the balance of the Force. And because if the Sentinel and the Grande, if you put them together, they would be like a perfectly balanced being, because they do the opposite things.
Well, and yeah, the Sextinel, he's dressed all in white, you know.
Yeah, He doesn't have his red Sith tattoos and stuff. Yeah. And so I like it because we're seeing the two sides of him. And that's how I feel like why Kanan grabbing the red lightsaber is very important too, is because I feel like this is showing like how he could have been, he could have followed the same path as Grande. He could have went to the dark side. Like, we know in A New Dawn he was struggling with darkness and he was hiding his light side and he was hiding the Force. He was trying not to accept the Force and he was going down a very dark path and he chose to come back to the light. Unlike Grande, who went down a dark path and didn't come back. And so I've always loved their characters, and I'll get more into act three, but like, I've always seen them as being very much foils and mirrors to each other. So,
well, my only other note is Ahsoka is backing up the old Yoda knew everything theory in this.
Yeah. Oh, I got a Yoda note.
Yoda note.
I got a Yoda note.
Well, I'm all done with mine. So hit us with the Yoda note. Well, you don't have to hit us with that. You can go through them in any order you want.
Yeah. My first note is, we got a little bit of this in the Ahsoka novel, but it's been a long time since I read the Ahsoka novel, so I don't remember the details of it. But I just wish they would put in, like, a touch more of how Ahsoka feels about not being a Jedi anymore. And I thought of this as when they were trying to open the temple, and Ezra's like, well, you can open the Jedi temple, and she's like, I'm not a Jedi. And, because they do a really good job animating Ahsoka's feelings, like showing how like certain things you could tell it kind of gets to her, but she never vocalizes it. And I'm not like wanting them to do like too much more. I just wish they did like a tad bit more, just a touch, because they do a good like visual animation of it. I just kind of wish there was like a little bit more of her saying like looking at Ezra and she's like, it doesn't bother me like it used to. And, like, just something like that. Just, like, a touch more. I just wish they got that. I do love the moment that they open the temple and Ahsoka's watching it, because her eyes just get so big. And you know that Ahsoka has gone through so many experiences. She's seen so much in her life already. But something like them opening this Jedi temple still amazes her, and that the Force still amazes her. And I like that moment because it shows that the Force is always changing and she doesn't know everything, even though she's already so experienced. And I liked that because she's just looking at the temple in wonder, like, wow, the Force is cool.
It's a moment. I totally believe she could have helped them open it up if she wanted to. You know, I don't think the temple would have rejected her, because look, they get into Sith temples. You know, the Jedi get into Sith temples, and you wouldn't think that the Inquisitors would be able to even access a Jedi temple, but they can too. You know, it's basically you can use the Force, the temple. So, I mean, Ahsoka could obviously still use the Force. So she could. She was just being down on herself.
But I like that moment, though, like when it's opening. It reminded me of the moment in the fourth Harry Potter movie. Like when they get to the Quidditch thing and the Weasleys put up their little tent and it looks like a tiny little tent. But when Harry walks in, it's like much bigger on the inside, and he just smiles and he goes, I love magic. It was that kind of moment when she's watching the temple like rise. It's that moment of her just going, yep, I love the Force.
Yeah,
I love it.
Here's that old Jedi stuff I remember.
Yeah. I also like that the temple gave them a new door, because like, and then all like so many Force temples are different. Like, we have some like stationary ones on Coruscant, but this one, like, it gave them a new door because they have a new problem. And I like that it's a changing temple and it's not like a stationary temple. I thought that was cool. Yeah,
they're going someplace different, you know?
Yeah. But it's cool because it's different, but it's still the same location. So it's a really cool way to redo that.
Yeah.
I love Grande's lightsaber pike and how it just kind of like flips out.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, ooh, how's this going to work? It's like a double barrel shotgun. And then it's like, oh, okay, it flips around and works. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and it sounds like we might be getting something similar to it in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, it looks like they got a bunch of little novelties coming along.
Yeah, so. Okay, my Yoda note. Ready? I lost my spot. I think Ahsoka's line about Yoda is a very interesting one, because she says that the line is, "I don't think anyone truly knew Yoda." And I think that's a very telling line, because when the original trilogies first came out, we had a very distinct view of Yoda. And then we got the prequels that shaded in more of the Jedi Order, and we saw how, like, bureaucratic they were, and, like, it wasn't showing them in their best light. And then in The Last Jedi, after he's dead and he's in the Force, he's almost like a more enlightened version of Yoda. So I don't think we – I think she's right. I don't think we really truly know 100% who Yoda is. I mean, I keep thinking back to Master and Apprentice, where Qui-Gon is like, "These are slaves. Can I help them?" And Yoda's like, "No, they're part of their society. The Jedi don't mess with people's society." And Qui-Gon's like, "What the fuck? They're slaves, Yoda."
I mean, Yoda had to be somebody different for all, for almost everybody. You know, there's a Yoda for kids. I mean, Luke Skywalker even got the Yoda for kids in the beginning of Empire Strikes Back, when, you know, Yoda was marching him through the Jedi ages quickly. But when Yoda first started dealing with Luke, he treated him like a little kid. He was like, "Oh, ha ha," and joking around, and, you know, testing the waters with him and stuff. So, but I think, you know, nobody could ever know what could know Yoda completely, because Yoda really, like, if he didn't know everything, he knew so much of a totality of what was going on that he couldn't, you know, he could only give it out bits and pieces, and some of the stuff would probably really screw things up if he let people know, you know. That it makes him seem like, on the scale of the Force, he had to, you know, I mean, most people would expect Yoda to, like, try to avert every bad thing that was going to happen in the storyline, but Yoda might have known that, you know, some terrible things have to happen to people in order for things to balance out down the line, you know? So he had to keep it all compartmentalized.
Yeah.
Yoda's a rock. He is an island.
It reminded me of the Shakespearean line, like, "The world is a stage," and, like, depending on — I'm paraphrasing Shakespeare, but, like, depending on who you were shows, like, a different side of yourself, because everyone's an actor in your own stage play. Because, you know, we're different around our kids, which we're different around our spouses, we're different around our bosses, we're different around our friends, we're different around different friend groups. And I thought that was a very telling line. Like, the more and more stories we get of Yoda, the more and more we really don't know who he was and who he is.
I just like that we got to quote Shakespeare and Simon and Garfunkel on Yoda within a 1 minute period.
Yeah.
He's a complicated character.
But that's all I have for Act 2, because my only other line is big notes saying, "Yoda's missing, like, half his teeth. What's his teeth always missing? Why am I just noticing this now?"
No Dennis on Dagobah.
Yeah, but that's all I have for Act 2.
All right, let's wrap this puppy up.
Let's get into the feelings. Act 3?
Act 3.
All right. Kanan and the mysterious sexy man who I spoiled in my Act 2 notes, but I'm going to still pretend I don't know who he is, are still fighting it out. Kanan is getting pushed back against the wall, and he grabs a random saber to fight with two hands. He ignites it, and the blade is red. And the sextinel is joined by two more temple guards, so now there are three sexy, mysterious men. Yes, please.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. But no one's got time for that, because it's time for the feelings portion of this program. Ahsoka is sitting alone and meditating, and she hears a voice call her name. And then she hears it again, and it's Anakin's voice, and Anakin asks why Ahsoka left him, and then his figure is behind her, and he's all smoky, and it's Anakin, and Anakin demands to know where Ahsoka was when he needed her the most, and he calls her selfish, and how dare you, sky fucker, trash man, because Ahsoka is the best of all of you. Anyway, Ahsoka starts to tear up, and she starts to cry, because she sees through the Force that Anakin has become Darth Vader, and it confirms her fears, and oh my god, I'm dead. That moment hurts me so much, but not as much as it hurts me in Twilight, oh my god. Anyway, back with Ezra and the monster that is Yoda, Ezra asks if Yoda knows a way to defeat the Sith, And Yoda explains that the Jedi thought that they were doing the right things by fighting in the Clone Wars, but they ended up consumed by the dark side. It's not about whether or not to fight. It's about how they choose to fight. And suddenly, the temple starts to crumble around them. The Inquisitors are using their powers to force their way into the temple. And Kanan notices that the temple is shaking around them. And the Sextinel says that the agents of the dark side are coming from Ezra, and that Kanan can't protect Ezra from them. And finally, Kanan makes his choice. He admits that he can't protect Ezra forever, so he lays down his saber. And the Sextinel lifts his blade one last time, and he knights Kanan, making him an official Jedi Knight. And then he removes his masks, and it's my boyfriend Grande from season one, and I missed him so much, and oh my goodness, I love his precious face, Chris. I love it. Like, he looks good in gray. Like, I love him with, like, the red tattoos, but the gray looks nice, and I just love my Grande. I love my Grande, okay,
guys? Oh my
guys?
God.
I love him. What?
Oh my God.
Oh my God, I love him. I love Grande so much, and I miss him.
Did you see him without his tattoos? Oh my God.
I love the red tattoos, but I love the gray tattoos too. I love them each separately for different reasons. Oh my God.
Oh my God, I got pictures of him on my wall all over my
room. I got a picture of him yesterday. My buddy. No, my buddy drew me a picture of him in glasses, and he looks so cute, and I sneezed. I love him so much. And I have a picture of him on my phone wall, and it's a lightsaber, and one half is his gray face, and one half is his angry face. I love him. Anyway, the temple is crumbling all around them, and Grande
says that they will
help the enemies while the rest of them escapes, and Kanan runs out. Ahsoka is still grappling with her Anivator reveal, but she gets a glimmer of hope. She believes there still is a way to save her master, which is a point we'll come back to in the season finale, and she rushes out too. Back with Ezra, he still wants answers, but the temple is falling and Yoda leaves him with a single piece of information. Find Malachor. Ahsoka, Kane, and Ezra meet back up again and they run to get the heck out of there. The Inquisitors got the temple open, but they went through the Sith door. And out of the shadows comes Grande, lighting up his lightsaber pike. And the Inquisitors are like, oh shit, it's our boss! Our boss is back from the dead, oh god!
I like how at first they're more like, hey, boss. And then they're like, boss?
I know, they're like,
boss, I thought you were my friend, boss.
Boss, why? Surrounded by temple guards. They blind or knock out the Inquisitors or something. It's not very clear, but hey, it's the Force. And back with our heroes, they're running out of the temple when Ahsoka suddenly stops and she looks back and there's Yoda. And he looks so proud of her as he waves her off. And she smiled. They get outside where Chopper is waiting for them in the Phantom minivan. And Chopper picks up the kids and they fly off. On board, Chopper tells them about Malachor. And Ahsoka says that Malachor isn't a person. It's a place. But she says it very darkly. She's just like, it's a place. And Imperials arrive at the Jedi Temple. And it's not just any Imperial. It's Darth freaking Vader, Anakin Skywalker. And the Inquisitors... The Inquisitors have broken open the Jedi Temple now, and Vader says that Papa Palps will be super happy to find this discovery, as we will see in Season 4. The end!
I just realized...
I didn't realize how much stuff connects later until I watched this episode a second time. I was like, oh yeah, they do have the Lothal Temple in Season 4, and it's because of this.
Yep. And I didn't pick up till you restated it in here when Ahsoka, and it made a little twinge in my brain, but I just figured it out. When Ahsoka said that Malachor isn't a person, it's a place, it's a reference to Empire Strikes Back, where Princess Leia goes, the Lando system. He goes, oh, Lando's not a system, he's a person. So it's just sort of a reversal of the Lando line.
Oh, Lando line. Right.
They called him up on the Lando line. But I didn't figure that out till just now, cause I'm dumb.
That's all right.
Okay, so my notes. I thought in my complete 180 degree swing that the the scene with Ahsoka and Anakin slash Vader was pitch perfect. It was just pitch. One of my other lines is just good writing. This just well written. It was the just the minimal number of lines to perfectly communicate what it had to communicate. And visually, the way they laid it out, very simple, with her, him behind her, with the mist flowing around him, just very, very well.
And you can see how much pain Ahsoka is in.
Yeah. She knows struggling. It's a vision. She sort of knows what's going on, and she knows it's not really him, but on a level, it is really him. It's just, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Because we talked about that in the opening of the season when Anakin and Ahsoka connected in the season opening. Fire Customs, the Siege of Lothal. Sorry, it took me a second. I was like, yep. What was the opening? Because Vader was like, oh, the Padawan lives. And we had talked about it. We're like, did Ahsoka figure it out then? That was Anakin. And I think that she's kind of always known, but she was in denial.
She might have known, but this made it clear, you know.
Because I could, I would understand her if she was in denial. You wouldn't want someone you love to turn into a psycho.
She might like not even have consciously realized it, but it was just there tickling the back of her brain. Mm-hmm. But yeah, another note I have is, I have Good Grande, yay, Good Grande, and he's so pretty. I had a note that said, pretty sure Sith can't open a Jedi temple, but I've changed my mind on that in the 24 hours since I wrote it. I'm like, no, they should be. I remembered that, you know, there's Ezra and Kanan doodle around with a Sith temple. So,
well, the thing is that, like, you can tell that they force it open.
Right.
Because for one, like, I forgot.
They're not opening it the same way that Kanan and Ezra opened it.
And I forgot about this detail. The ground around them is red. Like, did you catch that detail? Like,
yeah, like, the little lines, the little, like,
they're lit up red.
Yeah, right. So the temple knows what's going on, and that's why they got a different door and, you know, just had a whole different way of entering it, you know?
Yeah,
I thought it was hilarious, so that she had to send up her little camera droid to determine that it was a Jedi. You know, she's like, oh, it's a Jedi temple. It's like, yeah, but it looks, you can just look at it too, and it looks pretty much the same. You could have come to that conclusion pretty easily, but I just thought that was kind of funny. I think the only downside in all of this was the I don't mind the Inquisitors being stooges, but their powers are a little inconsistent in this one, you know, of them being kind of stooges and then sort of being kind of powerful at the end. But I'll give it a lot of leeway because they're inside a Jedi temple, although getting into the Jedi temple shows a good deal of power. But once
they were
struggling
to lift it. I actually think that they might have accidentally broke the temple. Because in the past, like when Kanan and Ezra have used the temple, as soon as they like finish it, like as soon as they walked in, the temple would close and go back down. And then when they needed to leave, it would come back up. And then like again, when they left, it would go back down. But once the Inquisitors force it open, it's almost like it's broke because when Vader arrives, it's still open. And so I almost wonder if they like broke the temple.
I don't know if they broke it or it just acts, you know, it acts differently for them. It's just like, yeah, whatever. I'm not closing the door for you. There's a lot of, basically, whenever you get inside of there, everything that happens is like almost 100% symbolic and internal, you know, taken from your internal world. So I'll give them a lot of leeway for being more consistently powerful around the Jedi Temple and stuff like that.
Can I go ahead and do my other Inquisitor notes while we're showing them?
Yeah, I only have one. I have one more quick note, which was there was some nice dark Yoda theme music going.
Oh yeah. Point.
But yeah, otherwise, yeah, it's all you now.
I'll go ahead and do my other Inquisitor note. I like that the Inquisitor is also in a way got their own force vision too, because they force their way into this temple And then the temple was like, well, fuck you guys. You don't get to come into my house, which is the house. And so the temple protects itself with the image of temple guards. And one of the temple guards is the Grand Inquisitor, who is their old leader. So I just like that because, like, the temple was almost, like, sentient enough to be like, I need to protect myself. Here's these manifestations of temple guards.
And Yoda could have had something to do with that, too.
Yeah, yeah. I have a Yoda note about that. I might as well go ahead and say my Yoda note since I mentioned it. Where did it go? There it is. I didn't know this until I watched Rebels Recon, that it was Yoda motivated all the visions for the trio. And I kind of hated that they said that, because I always liked the idea that it was the Force showing them these visions, which I liked better. And, like, and maybe it's the Force working through Yoda, like, Yoda is just helping channel the Force to them, and the Force is taking over. But, like, I liked it that the idea was the Force that was doing this, not Yoda motivating it. And the reason I bring this up, because Yoda knows about Anna Vader. He knows Anakin became Vader. And if he is the one that's showing Ahsoka these visions of Anakin, then that's a dick move, because Anna Vader was just like, you left me, you're selfish. And it's like, is Yoda telling this to Ahsoka? Like, I just wish I didn't
see,
know
but
that.
I don't think the image is completely, I think with the Force like that, it's Yoda bringing up something. It's partly Ahsoka. He's bringing up a vision. You know, he might control what the vision is, but the vision is also controlled by how Ahsoka sees it. You know, it's like the Jedi tree. You know, Yoda might be giving the initial projection of Anakin, but that projection, it feeds off what's inside Ahsoka. And I just want to tell people as I hear this, there's an air show in town, an Air Force air show. So we have fighter jets flying over the town to promote it in formation. And I can hear them right now. But if they fly over this house, it's going to sound like I'm getting bombed out of existence. I'm fine. It's just an air show. They're just showing off.
If they come over
the house, it's going to sound like the world's ending on this podcast. It's going to sound like six jet fighters flying 500 feet over my roof.
But I always thought it was the Force for Ahsoka and Kanan, and like for like Ezra and Yoda, that was them connecting together through the World Between Worlds. But like I always liked the idea that it was the Force that was dictating Kanan and Ezra's Kanan and Ahsoka's vision. So if it is Yoda that was motivating all three, I was just like, I kind of wish it was just the Force.
Yoda's not directly telling him, but Yoda's maybe channeling it's almost like a triangulation, you know, with Yoda, the Force, and them. Yoda's bringing up the vision, but when he brings up the vision, the Force takes over and just sort of pulls stuff out of Ahsoka's and Kanan's feelings in order to, you know, play them in the, you know, I mean, it plays on Kanan's fears. It's like, here's your worst fears. And Kanan, and it's all symbolism. Kanan's fighting his fears, and then he stops and embraces them and says, okay, you know, I might realize that, but I'm still going to try to be the best teacher. Here come the fighter jets.
I hear it now.
They didn't come close. They came close this time, but that, you know, yeah.
But my next note is, I just really miss watching Kanan and Grande fight. Like, it was always so special. It was one of my favorite parts of season one, was whenever they fought, because we started, like, episode, I think it was, like, 4 or 5 the first time they fought, and, like, Kanan was terrible at fighting him. But Kanan progressed more and more throughout the season, and he got better and better and better, and the fights got more and more, like, intense. And I've always loved watching the two of them fight, because they just improve against each other, and they get better and better. And that's, I mean, they're still great foils and great mirrors for each other. They are both mirrors and foils. And what a mirror means is that, like, they are very similar characters that reflect off each other. But being foils, they're similar characters that have different paths. And I still stand by what I said at the end of season one when we covered it, that I wish they kept Grande alive, because Grande could have really been a great series-long villain for Kanan.
Oh my god!
No! I know, I heard it. It's loud. Holy shit.
That wasn't
Excuse
even a
me,
close
airplane.
One.
We're recording a podcast. Can you snot?
I'll get that memo out to the U.S. Air Force. Yes.
Not right now. No, it's just I still stand by that Grande, and I wish that he was a series long villain for Kanan, because they are really good and they really do make each other better. Like, Grande has made Kanan a better Jedi, because Kanan can see, especially now that he knows that Grande used to be a Jedi, and he sees that now. Like, he sees the path that he could have taken. Grande always pushed Kanan to get better at his skills, to work harder, to do his job better, and to embrace being a Jedi. And that's
that version of Grande always exists, you know?
Yeah, and I like that it was Grande that knighted him, because he was really the motivation for Kanan to step up. Because I think Kanan, wasn't really taking... Because we saw it. He wasn't really taking being a Jedi seriously until Ezra came. And then we saw Kanan struggle being a teacher all season one. Like, he was like, I don't know if I can teach him correctly. I don't know if I'm doing this right. I don't know what it is. But it was always the threat of Grande that pushed him more and more to be a teacher and to, more embrace that role and become that more leader role and become that Jedi role until he's now here. So I actually really love that it's Grande that knights him, that yeah. He is the one that goes, okay, I am passing on my old legacy to you. And I love that. It was just nice to see them fight one more time, because I love these two together. I love these two characters. I talked about them all season one. I love Grande and Kanan together. I think they're really good pairs. And I hate that they got cut so short. I still hate that. I still hate that he was killed in season one. I hate it. But I love it so much. My next note is, I like Yoda's explanation to Ezra about how protecting his friends and fighting isn't wrong. It's about how he chooses to fight. And we keep coming back to the example of Saul Guerrera, just because I think he's a really good example and a really good thing of this. Because Saul is technically a good guy. He's technically a rebel like the rest of our heroes, but he chooses to fight wrong. He doesn't care about civilians. He doesn't care about...
He's completely based in physical reality.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have a spiritual angle on it. And I guess you could almost say the same thing about Cassian in Rogue One and the future TV show.
Yeah.
But there's no force in it. And I like how Yoda's just sort of when, you know, Ezra's like, how do we defeat him? And Yoda's just like, defeat that, you know, the concept of win and lose is much more, you know, long, big picture in Yoda's mind and vague than in, you know. And I think that's one of the things of, like, if you have a franchise like Star Wars, the further along you get, the more you're forced away from having black and white, good and bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As you just have more story pile up, you can't maintain that, like, here's how you win and here's how you lose. You know, it's more of it's the journey.
Yeah. I'm trying to form a question in my head, but I can't word it really well, because at this time period, Yoda knows about Luke and Leia. And so he knows that there is still like a hope out there. Do you think, because this is before he dies, so this is him just chilling out on Dagobah, having a good time, and probably meditating a lot. Do you think the Force has given him any inkling about the sequel trilogy era, like knowing that it's not going to be finished with Luke and Leia, that it's going to have to continue into like Rey and Kylo?
Yeah, I think Yoda has...
Yoda knows everything, Chris.
Yoda might... once Yoda goes into the Force, and maybe even before they go into the Force, they might start having... We'll see it definitely happening in Rebels here, that time is not as fluid to the Force as it is to somebody... Or, you know, in the real world, there's a lot of, you know, connections to the future and the past. So I'm guessing Yoda's big picture could span thousands and thousands of years, you know? And the thing about the future is, like Yoda has always said, the future is always going to be murky, because you can sort of see into the future, but the nature of time is the future is going to keep branching off. So it's like you can sort of see what's happening in the future in the large scale, but, you know, you might not have 100% of how it gets there, or it could totally change if somebody takes a different path and stuff. So, yeah, it's all really murky, and that I think that's what makes it fun for me.
What if it's not as murky as we think it is? Well, it is very murky, but a lot of it might be just like Yoda doesn't realize what he's seeing, because when he's talking to Ezra, we know now because of season 4 that they are sitting in the world between worlds. Like, that's where they are. And as every time Ezra comes in, he gets a little bit more of it as his powers grow, until we get to season 4 where he is walking down a road and he's hearing all these voices, and some of the voices are Rey, some of the voices are Kylo, some of the voices are from Rogue One, which haven't happened yet. And so these are all future events that, like, Ezra doesn't know what he's hearing, but we know that Yoda's in the world between worlds. He has greater abilities and stuff like that. So what if he's taken that path? And so, like, he's hearing all these voices, he just doesn't know exactly what it is. And so he knows that this journey is not over yet, that's going to keep on going. And that's the question. I lost it at the end there.
Yeah, Uno, I think Yoda has more of a... I don't think Yoda... When I say Yoda knows everything, he's not like the master scriptwriter. You know, he doesn't know exactly how everything's going to go on, but he's got a better picture of it. He's got a better picture of, like, it's like, oh, you know, if somebody just shot Anakin Skywalker at some point before he became Darth Vader, would this have... That would have solved everything, you know? It's not as cut and dried as that. So, you know, Yoda was probably like, on some level he knew he had to watch Anakin fall to the dark side, you know, that stopping Anakin from falling to the dark side isn't necessarily what you needed to do to defeat Palpatine or whatever. Yeah. And depending on what's in episode 9, you know, there might have been an even bigger picture with Palpatine besides Vader chucking him down the hole. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which does not answer the question, but that's
yeah, parts. I know. Where am I? Oh, I mentioned in Act 1 that this is a mini Kanan transition episode. All season, we've seen Ezra's abilities grow more and more, and sometimes having abilities that Kanan doesn't have, like with animals. And Kanan is realizing that he's going to have to one day let Ezra go and to go on find his own path. And when he chooses that and he lays down his weapons, that's when he becomes a Jedi Knight. So it's a mini Kanan transition episode. It's not a big one, but it's a mini one. So this is spoilers for the season finale. So I'm just saying it if you don't want to be spoiling, but honestly, we're always spoiling everything at this point. We are just talking about the world between worlds. It's fine. So when Yoda tells Ezra about how they fight, how they choose to fight, which is the important things, and then he tells Ezra to find Malachor, and I just realized, what's on Malachor? Darth Maul. Darth Maul is there, and I realized that all next season is Darth Maul showing Ezra the wrong way to win.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes... I think a lot of this is Yoda saying, like, you know, you can't, it's not good to avoid your dark side. You know what I mean? It's, mm-hmm. you have to go full bore at it and face it if you're going to deal in order to deal with it. If you don't go full bore and face it, that's when it's going to get you. So that's another, like, big picture, like Yoda knows that Ezra has to see the wrong path, you know?
Yeah.
In order to know the difference between the right and the wrong path, and to experience it rather than have it festering as an idea, to see the reality of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love it all. And my last note is, until we get season 7, from what we know is the last time that Ahsoka saw Yoda, she was leaving the Jedi Temple after they put her on trial for a murder that she didn't commit. And so I like the little moment where Ahsoka looks back and sees Yoda waving at her, because it's a nice, like, little moment of forgiveness of each other. Like, he's just like, sorry, and hi, I'm proud of you. Yoda looks so proud when he waves at Ahsoka. He's just like, yeah. I'm so proud of you! And Ahsoka just, like, smiles and, like, nods at him, like, yeah, I forgive us. Like, I forgive the Jedi for what they did.
Yeah, it's Yoda was giving out some good vibes.
And there's just and she needed so some good much vibes. Unsaid there. There's so much unsaid.
Sorry.
What?
They're buzzing me again.
Oh, okay, the planes. But yeah, like, there's just so much unsaid in that moment. And it's just a really nice little moment. And I'm actually so surprised, like, you didn't pick up on the Indiana Jones thing.
I am, too. I usually do pick up on it. And I picked up on some Indiana Jones in the next episode, too, which is funny.
But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, you ready for me to score it up?
I'm ready for you to score it up, Chris.
Here come the planes again. They know I'm... I gave this one a 9 out of 10.
Wow!
Maybe it was because I didn't like it so much the first time because I wasn't paying attention enough, but this is a really well-written episode, and it does all the connecting to the past and future very, very well and in a very deep way for a 22-minute cartoon. So I gave this one a 9 out of 10. I really like this, both visually and story-wise. Very well written, very well executed. It's a special episode, guys. I like it.
For me, like, there's so many feels and everything hurts, which is wonderful. I just love seeing my Grande again. I miss him. I miss him already again. I watched the scene where he flipped out the lightsaber pike like 10 times. Like,
well,
I just
it's not just nostalgic, his appearance in here. It really, like, adds
symbolic
to the whole Grande experience.
Yeah. Yeah. But I absolutely watched him unflip that lightsaber pike like 10 times. Like, that's my sex. That's my sexuality right there. I just kept hitting, like, the back 10 seconds button every time. Just the way it's just like, cha-chick! I was like, oh, I'm so hard right now. Anyway, Ahsoka is just talking about Anakin, and it's so nostalgic and painful, and now she knows that it's Anakin, and done so right. And Kanan is knighted, and we get Yoda and Vader, and there's just so much going on in this episode, and it's all great stuff, and it's presented so well, and it's both nostalgic, as you said, and, like, gives so much for the future episodes as well. So I gave it an 8.75 out of 10, and the only reason it was a slightly lower is because I know Honorable Ones was my 9, and it's not quite the same level as Honorable Ones to me, but it's almost there. It's just short. So,
I can't believe I gave it a higher score than you, but yeah, there you are. I really like this episode.
I really like this episode too, so. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from Facebook for our episode, A Princess on Lothal. Take it away, Chris. It's just a little snippet of one.
Just a little snippet from Paul C. Kelly. Just a little taste of the Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
Thought this fit well in where Princess Leia would have been at this point compared to A New Hope. Oh yeah, definitely. It did well here without meddling with the original trilogy. Oh no, I thought it enhanced it a little bit. It, like, actually enhanced it without being... It could have been really cheesy, like, you know, here's spunky Princess Leia from Episode 4, but no, we got a Princess Leia who wasn't quite as sure of herself because she was a little younger, so I liked it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I liked how they, like, wove in all the political stuff where she's just like, I can't just run out your ship. Ryder, kidnap me.
Yeah, no, they totally played it for character rather than for nostalgia, which I really appreciate that, because the temptation these days to just, you know, fully be like, here's the Princess Leia, you know, in Star Wars is very high, and they avoided it.
I was actually talking with Sean, who was our guest several weeks ago, and we were talking about The Mandalorian, and I feel like I'm excited for The Mandalorian, but it's not the thing that I'm most excited for, and I think a lot of it is, well, for one, I'm just not, like, you know me, I don't like super, like, crazy, gritty stuff, so I feel like it's going to be that, but I also feel like a big part of it is going to be very fan servicey, which I don't mind. I think there is a place for fan service in Star Wars. And I feel like The Mandalorian is going to be playing up a lot of fan service, which I feel like is the right place for it. I feel like that is a show where they can play up some fan service, make it like dark and gritty, but also have some camp in it. I think it would be fun if there's like a little campiness in it, just to kind of give it that old like Star Wars feel. And I feel like that's the place for it. But A Princess on Lothal with Princess Leia, that is not the place for fan service, and I'm glad that they didn't go there. So like
they're going in Mandalorian, the fan service I think is tonal, you know. Yeah. So that's a different thing than just having the character like walk out of the old movie.
Yeah. So we didn't choose our candy again. We're starting to run low,
but we
Dario.
A slim Dario does have more candy for us, so it's coming soon.
Did we come to the conclusion that you don't have the Chocopic with the dog on it? We came to that conclusion, right?
I don't know. I don't have anyone with a dog on it here.
Okay. There's a Twitch thing.
I've got one that is completely incomprehensible. It looks like Tluxix.
Oh, it's yellow?
Yes, it's yellow and brown, and it looks like it's got hazelnuts in it.
It looks like it's Hebrew, I'm wanting to say.
I can't tell. It has, you know, a hash mark and then T,
I found it on the list.
And what could be a K or an X?
I found it on the list, and Dario put a question beside the name.
Yes.
So if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's weird. So our friend Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat and Beat It podcast, sends us candy all over the world to review. And this is the apostrophe.
This is definitely from all over the world because we can't even pronounce it.
Well, I recognize the Hebrew because I saw Israel and I'm like, that is Hebrew. And he wrote the Tilks question mark is from Israel. So I was like, that looks like Hebrew. I know what that looks like.
It's it looks like a standard candy bar. It tastes like a Snickers with almonds in it.
Oh my god. I thought it was gonna be more caramelly in the middle. It's more all nougaty. No.
Are those almonds? They're a lot stronger flavored nut than They're delicious.
I don't know my nuts as well. So I don't know. I just like, this is very nutty.
It's delicious.
Oh, man. When you find one, there's nuts.
It's like a hyped up Snickers bar. Jacked up Snickers.
I'm a little hungry, so.
Me too.
I'm going to put that up to the side.
Hungry, but not angry.
Well, that's all I have. Did you have anything else for the episode?
Nuh-uh.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website where we keep all the podcasts in the giant vault, including this podcast. Delicious.
I know. I'm trying to, like, scrape it out of my teeth.
We are also on Facebook. You can go to the Two True Freaks podcast on Facebook or the Two True Freaks Cantina. The podcast site is where we post all our podcasts, and the cantina is more of a hangout sort of spot. And if you want to follow through the more slightly more hipper medium, there is Twitter, and our Twitter feed is run by the infinitely hip Gene, the podcasting machine.
Dun, 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 dun. Gene.
And he'll post all our episodes too. And if you prefer tweeting and Twittery stuff, that's where you'll find us. And I think that's it. I think that's all I have to mention. We don't got no Instagram. You can find us on iTunes, and Please leave a comment, a review.
Because when you guys leave like 5-star reviews and comments and stuff, it just helps people find our show. So if you like what we're doing, don't you want other people to find us?
Give us a review.
Don't be selfish. Don't share us all to yourself. Spread us around.
speaking of spreading around, where can they find you?
Thanks, Chris.
Well, I'm saying, instead of just talking about Two True Freaks, where can you find Hope Mullinex?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. It's also kind of like, the more I've thought about it too, it's also for me where I like to share like our other... Oh, sorry, I just burped. That was like a very silent, very long burp. That was like a 2-second burp. I'm so sorry. That came out of nowhere. On JGuysAndJedi, I also like to promote other podcasts that I'm listening to, and a lot of our Star Wars friends, like one being Jonna, Marie, and Ma, who were guests with us at the beginning of the season from Geeky Bubble.
So, yeah, and like, they never showed up at the picnic, you guys.
They were getting ready for, like, they just got back from Celebration, was about to, like, was getting ready for D23.
And we're off to another con. Okay.
Yeah, and was getting ready for D23, so I talked to them a little bit about that. But, like, I like to share, like, other Star Wars podcasts on it. So if you're looking for, like, other shows to listen to, at JGuysAndJedi, I do retweet all the podcasts that I'm listening to. One is Friends of the Force, which Chris and I may or may not be on in a few weeks. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. There's Friends of the Force, Geeky Bubble, I listen to Lousy Beautiful Town, Lipstick and Lightsabers, Sky Talkers. I just started Hearts of Kyber. Knights of Ren with a W, like Sabine Wren, W-R-E-N, is a really nice one. They do Rebels too. So even though I use JGuysAndJedi to promote our show and artwork and stuff that I like, I also use it to promote for other Star Wars shows too. So if you're looking for some other Star Wars shows, like, check us out over at JGuysAndJedi, because I do like to pimp out other shows. You can also find me at Hope Mullinex, which is my own Twitter, where I talk about things. I have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. Not that it's going to matter by the time this episode comes out, but I just wrote a Dragon Con kind of survival guide. But there's some stuff in that too that would be good for other conventions, so you can check it out there. And I'm also a fan fiction writer on Archive of Our Own, the Hugo Award-winning
you
Archive
are a
of
Hugo
Our
Award-
Own.
No, you are a Hugo Award-winning artist writer now.
Woo! Yeah. If you've
everybody
ever
everybody who's written on Archive of Our Own is now a Hugo winning writer.
Oh, I'm just so proud of that. I'm so proud of that. I really am.
I should start just finding a little picture of a Hugo and sticking it up in the corner of our show every week.
No, don't do that, please.
I won't, but it's funny. It's
do it on the Lucky Lucky one, because that actually is my fun.
With the Hugo Award winning story, The Lucky Leku.
Please don't. But as Chris says, I write Star Wars fan fiction. I have a story called The Lucky Leku, which you can actually hear on this show.
Which won a Hugo Award?
Episodes. Huh?
Which won a Hugo Award, guys?
I did the first two episodes as a podfic on our show. I also have another fic called Forces of Gravity, which is a Thrawn fan fiction that's ongoing.
Hugo Award-winning Thrawn fiction fantasy.
Romance? It's a romance. It's a romantic story. But fantasy, yeah, romance. Like after Dragon Con, I plan to
romantasy.
Come back to those.
Huh? It's a romantasy.
It is a romantasy. But after Dragon Con, I plan to come back to the fan fiction, because I've just been so busy lately and crazy between life and getting ready to go to Raleigh and going to Raleigh and coming back from Raleigh and then turning around and getting ready for Dragon Con.
You mean Raleigh?
That I will be coming back to it after Dragon Con. So that's where you can find me. I'm excited for next week, because I've only seen the Forgotten Droid, I think, once. So I honestly, like, when I was kind of taking a peek at it, I was like, I don't remember any of this.
It is quite a tonal shift from this episode.
Yeah.
It's quite the tonal shift in follow-up.
It's the one where they find AP-5, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I remember, I've seen it once, and I remember it's the episode where they get AP-5, but I don't remember much past that, so I'm excited. It'll be like watching it all for the first time, all over again, so yay!
We go from the Force to a chopper comedy episode.
So. Well, Chopper hasn't had an episode all season, so it's gonna be fun.
No, right, but it's a very lighthearted, you know, physical comedy episode compared to the strong drama of this one. You know, it gives you a little bit of a break in the drama.
Well, good, because I need to start that outline, because we're recording the episode tomorrow. So
bye,
guys.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Sock it to me?